In this episode of Technically Leadership, Sasha Zarkowski joins me to discuss the growth mindset in technical organizations. Sasha has 2 decades of experience in leadership across development, operations, product management, and technical sales. We chat about what exactly a growth mindset is, how psychological safety at work is related, how a growth mindset is different than a fixed mindset, and how to build a learning culture into your organization, including why you need to be a leader already to build one. Let's get to it. All right. As you've already heard today in the introduction, I have Sasha here with me, and we were actually just kind of diving into the topic, and then we realized we didn't actually hit record yet. So why don't we start out with, what was the question you were asking me, Sasha? Let's kind of start there.
Yeah, so this is kind of my favorite question when it pertains to learning organizations or learning for individuals, and that is, do you believe that you can increase your intelligence through learning? And so I like to ask this question, and I feel like about 50% of people say yes, some percentage of people says absolutely not, and a lot of people say, well, yes, but, you know, not really, you know, somewhere in the middle. So, like, I would ask the audience kind of note, what's your answer to this question? What do you think? And then Laura, what did you think about it?
Well, so what I had said, because now that I know the answer, what I had said is that I thought the definition of intelligence was fairly fixed. Like, you have intelligence and then you can become learned. So there was a difference there. So my answer would have been no, but more because I think I'm misunderstanding the word. So you said that there's a definition that comes out of this.
So the definition, so I'm going back to the definition of growth mindset, right? That is coined by Carol Dweck, who did a whole bunch of research on the topic. And so growth mindset can pertain to more than just intelligence, but in terms of intelligence, the definition of growth mindset is you believe that you can increase your intelligence through learning, right? That is what growth mindset is. Now, I find it very often people think they have growth mindset, but when you ask the question in like, can you increase your intelligence? They say no. And I'm like, okay, where's the disconnect? And I think often it's because we think that the intelligence is fixed quantity, right? So like, I can learn new things, but I can't really change how intelligent I am. And this is also a very interesting thing where it goes to like IQ tests, because people are like, well, I can't increase my IQ. Well, guess what? If you prepare for an IQ test, you're going to score higher on an IQ test. That's how it works.
Right. Yeah.
But even more surprisingly, the person, Albert Binet, who actually invented the IQ test, didn't mean it as a quantifying measure for your intelligence. He meant it as a measure of learning and progress. So when he created the test, the idea was, and he actually was working with, I believe, underprivileged kids, and he was trying to measure if their education was successful, right?
Okay.
And then we gave it a bad name and we used it extensively to classify children. Right. So like we inverted the goal of the whole thing and made it into this big classification tool that like you classify kids into these buckets and you tell them like you're this intelligent and you're that intelligent and that's it. You can never change. So like we're actually, I'm a big believer that the way our educational system is set up is breeding fixed mindset and like actually destroying kids' desire to learn.
Right. Interesting. I mean, I guess this is kind of for an organizational standpoint, like as you think about kind of when you look at a group of people and you're trying to build that growth mindset in a company, this kind of plays into it, right? So you had mentioned that you're looking at, yes, there is personal growth, which is, you know, we talk about that with school, we talk about that with all those things. But then how do you get to a growth mindset in more of an organization?
Yeah. So an organization is a entity comprised of people. And so there's a lot of research on organizational learning. And so that if you start kind of looking at that and in aggregate, the same concept emerge in organizational learning as in personal learning, right?
Okay.
And what sort of one of the key learnings that I have from a bunch of stuff that I've read and researched and seen in professional experience is you can't have organizational learning without personal learning, right? If
right.
people okay. in the organization, largely most of them, don't have a growth mindset, then you will not have organizational learning because everybody's very defensive. But if people have growth mindset, that's sort of not enough. And you need also the organization itself to be conducive learning environment and any organization itself to learn, right? So
right.
organizational learning is comprised of two components, but it does start with an individual.
Right, right. So I guess we probably actually should go back because we really dove right into it. What is a growth mindset? Like how do you define it to someone?
So again, the proper definition is you believe that right. you can increase your intelligence through learning. And then the opposite of that is fixed mindset, which is you believe that your intelligence is fixed. So no matter how much you invest in learning, you're not going to improve your intelligence. So what happens when people have a fixed mindset, and like I said, the majority of us actually do, because this uh-huh. is what we come out of school with, like largely.
Right.
And I've lived in multiple countries. And the educational system is basically the same everywhere. I, going on a tangent, the best exception to that, I think, is Montessori schools. And I have not uh-huh. myself gone to Montessori, but that they seem to be much more invested in sort of the growth mindset approach to things. But largely normal schools are like constantly measuring and evaluating you and constantly having, this gets me very frustrated. Our schools have like correct questions and answers, right? So like mm-hmm. you have a single question, you have a single answer, and there's a benevolent entity of a teacher that always knows the correct answer, right? And that's kind of what we explain to children for years. So like what I see a lot in like college grads that join teams and organizations, they're like
yeah.
looking up to their manager for the correct answer. And I'm like,
right.
There is no correct, like, there's multiple correct answers. There's multiple incorrect answers. And also I don't necessarily always know what the correct answer is. And we need to approach it a little bit differently than just rely on Sasha's opinion for everything. Right.
Right. So, right.
And that again, like diving further into that is very pertinent to everything that comprises a learning organization. Right.
Yeah.
But so like when we have fixed mindset, what largely ends up happening is that every time you approach a test, you have to prove that you're intelligent, right? So every time I
okay.
walk into an interview or I walk into a room in a meeting that is an important meeting and I'm presenting something or like I'm even just having an opinion on something, I have to prove, because intelligence is a fixed quantity, right? In a fixed mindset, and I can't
right.
jump over my head. So like, I have to prove to people around me that I'm good enough, that I'm smart enough for this, right? Every time. It's very anxiety inducing because you literally have to do it over and over and over again. And like mm-hmm. every situation that is even remotely resembling a test, you feel like you have to be proving yourself over again.
Right.
Whereas in a growth mindset, I can learn. So like essentially a test is an opportunity to learn. And a test, like if it's important to me, I can always be like, okay, I didn't succeed because X, but I'm going to like study more. I'm going to, I don't know, like talk to people who know about this. I'm going to do an experiment to make an improvement. Or like, I'm just going to decide, you know what? I'm not good at dancing. I'm going to move on to something else. Right.
Right.
But you approach life largely in everything is an opportunity to improvement. And then you can just try to figure out how to improve if it's important to you. Whereas mm-hmm. in a fixed mindset, everything is like you can be on top of a mountain, you know, like you're the best, you're amazing. And then, I don't know, your boss gives you negative feedback for your past quarter performance and you just like
right.
disintegrate into depression. And then again, this is in a research and learning organizations, this is something that's been studied, like people having this sort of very brittle personality and mm-hmm. having very negative reactions to any kind of negative feedback.
So would you say that there's, we talked a lot about learning with the absence of fear. So clearly, like a fixed mindset, there's a ton of fear there.
that mm-hmm. that you have in an organization. So if, and this kind of, I guess, calls back to a previous podcast, but I know you had mentioned psychological safety as kind of being a really big component of a growth mindset in an organization. So would you say that if, like, let's say a leader, and you have to be pretty high up in an organization to really cultivate the mindset, right? The growth mindset that you want.
So this is something I believe in. This is something I feel like I came to this conclusion through, like, a school of hard knocks or whatever.
Right.
There's some levels of organizational changes that are very difficult to affect from bottom up, right? So, like, mm-hmm. as a manager, you can cultivate psychological safety in your team, but it's very difficult for you to influence the level of psychological safety in your entire company if it's a big company. And right. so, like, as an individual contributor or a low-level manager, your best chance is going and convincing someone in leadership that what they want is growth mindset and psychological safety and all of these good things. And mm-hmm. it, like, every organization, if you read their values, will profess that they're a learning organization. But, like, again, the research has been done. And again, this is from Chris Rogers, so this is probably 30 years old. But, like, 80% of organizations were not learning organizations by a definition. And it kind of repeated in other research in, like, all academic papers. Like, most organizations do not like learning. But no one will tell you that, right? Just like no one will tell you voluntarily that they have a fixed mindset, right? Like, we really right. like to believe that we are these good creatures and we, like, you know, we learn, and that's the other people who fail to learn and whatnot. I think so. When you come to personal learning, a lot of it is kind of your self-assessment, right? So, like, the mm-hmm. fixed mindset is largely your negative self-talk constantly telling you that you're failing at something. It's not usually not other people. Now, it could be coming from, you know, having a parent or a teacher who are extremely demanding and, you know, having certain assessments of your personality or your successes. But mm-hmm. like, by the time you're a working professional, it's largely in your head. And so kind of going towards a growth mindset is largely about convincing yourself not to have fear in certain situations, right? But on an organizational level, on a team level, and I know you just had an episode about psychological safety, but the biggest, one of the biggest determinants of how successful teams are is their psychological safety. And that is measured, like, how fearful are you of making mistakes? How fearful are you to admitting to mistakes? How comfortable are you to voice your true opinions without fear of retribution, right? Because that's a huge component to learning from the environment. Right. And I think this is, like, a huge parallel between personal learning and organizational learning. It's just, like, if you cultivate the absence of fear, you're mm-hmm. probably going to have good outcomes.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I mean, right now, I imagine it's kind of hard to cultivate that lack of fear in most organizations, because a lot of organizations are doing layoffs and things like that. And I think you actually had quoted a study that said the highest time of psychological safety is how soon since you joined an organization?
Yeah,
you were looking at this recently, and you said that you had found this number, and it just kind of blew my mind a little bit.
You can tell I read a lot of papers.
It's good.
But there was a recent study that came out that kind of blew my mind. And it was that, like, the highest level of psychological safety that people experience is just when they learn the organization and that join the organization. And then it goes, like, basically off a cliff over the next couple of years. And then it recovers very, very slowly. So there's, like, this rise up. And it recovers to the same level as somewhere about 20-year tenure. And you can think about how many organizations still have employees for 20 years. And there's still some, but not pretty some. Rare.
Yeah, right. Most people hop about every 5 years, if that. Sometimes it's like every 3 years, depending on kind of what you're doing.
You can kind of look at that chart and be like, that's why people hop jobs after 2 years. Because, like, you get this. Like, and it sort of makes sense to me in a sense that, like, trust is very hard to gain, but very easy to lose. So you walk into an organization with all your good assumptions and, you know, like, you know, positive prospects and whatever, and then you meet, you know, one toxic person, second toxic person. So like your psychological safety kind of gets down, and it may be like, maybe not even like your boss, maybe not even someone on your team, but like every time that you run into something that's not conducive to psychological safety, you kind of take a step back and go like, oh, it's not safe to be myself or to make mistakes here. And so like gradually just drops off and reaches the bottom of the round 2-year mark, which is kind of, yeah, it's not great for us as professionals, I think.
Yeah. I guess it's a little depressing too in some ways, because you can't, like, as you were saying, like sometimes you can't really affect that from like a grassroots point of view. It's really needing to come from the top. And I think you had mentioned productive and defensive reasoning, and that definition. And I think this is kind of related to it, right? Just thinking through.
The metaphor that I sort of like for this is like, you have basically two ways to approach decision making. Like that, I mean, there's probably more, but like this is the two main things that people do. Let's say, you know, you're making widgets and the widgets aren't selling and you want to make, you know, change to widgets. You walk into the room, you have a meeting with a whole bunch of people and they all have opinions about how they can improve the making of the widgets. So there's a type of organization in which the highest paid person in a room, right? So someone with the highest level or the highest status or highest, I don't know, level of respect or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. But there's an acronym for that called HIPPO, highest paid person. They win the argument by default. So like if a CEO is in this meeting, then the CEO's opinion is going to override everybody because they're the CEO and no one dares to say anything different. Like once they voice an opinion. And it's funny because we're like, we are psychologically conditioned to defer to authority. So it's CEOs, like executives often exist in this vacuum where like, even if they're not themselves very toxic and sort of overbearing, whatever, people just don't dare to voice their opinion. So if you're an executive and you walk into a room and you say, we should color the widgets green, everybody's just going to be like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. And no one will kind of voice their opinion or their dissent to that or be like, hey, I just saw a chart that says, you know, we shouldn't color because green is the least popular color or whatever. So that's kind of like one way. And majority of organizations in majority of places in organizations exercise this model, whether it's on purpose or just because this is kind of how things are, right?
Yeah.
And then the second model is what I call hypothesis-driven development. And it's not always about development, but it's hypothesis-driven decision-making, right?
Okay.
So you walk into a room and you say, okay, our widgets aren't selling. And I have a hypothesis that we should color the widgets green. Let's create a metric and measure that, like create a metric how we're selling right now, color a subset of widgets green and, you know, track the metric of how we're selling and then measure the results. So what this does is removes the ego, right? So even if I'm a C-level and I just had this opinion about green, we're now not talking about like, someone who then looks at the results is not talking about dissenting to my opinion about the situation. They're just like looking at the data, right? And it has to be very explicitly stated that the data is what's deciding it, right? So if we color the widgets green and we sell even less of them, we didn't fail, we learned.
Right. Okay. So this is kind of getting to that learning culture then that you're trying to get to, is the idea that you're driving the decisions based on data to learn.
Yep.
It's not necessarily
so like it's also easy to describe data driven and metrics and whatever, because it's also not necessarily easy to do. But the biggest point of this is like if you start with an opinion and then what happens is we call it watermelon reports. It's like everything is red, but it's green on the outside. Like basically what happens is like, again, if the C level said we want to color the widgets green, and we call it the widget screen, and we didn't, like, we sold even less. What happens is the people who are measuring that are, like, very likely to fudge the data to make it look like it's actually better, because they're trying to create the data to match the opinion, not create the data to learn, right?
Right.
So, right. And in fact, in companies where it's HIPAA-driven, like, people still say it's data-driven decisions. But right. a lot of times, so, like, I would think that you would relate to that, or anyone who has been working in a big organization long enough can relate to that. A decision comes from the top down, and it's a decision, you know, maybe good, maybe bad. And then someone on the ground says, like, this is really dumb. If we did that, you know, we'd, I don't know, destroy our CI/CD pipeline, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. And then their manager goes, well, I can't really say that, you know, it sounds too bad, whatever, this is a official decision. So they say, this might introduce some level of issues up, right? And that next manager goes, well, it might not be ideal to make this decision. You know, we might see some issues with the product, you know, but we think we can get over them. And then by the time it gets all the way up, it's like, oh, we're working on it.
Yeah, it gets fudged all the way up the chain, right? Until
so everyone removes a little bit of that negativity until it gets all the way up. If there's enough layers, it's completely, it's green. It's all good. All good. There's some problems, but we're working on them. It will be fine. And then the people downstairs essentially are like, I was yelling at the top of my lungs that we were going to have a problem, and no one's listening to me, right? And people upstairs like, well, I asked the entire company for their input, and they didn't tell me anything. They didn't tell me it was a problem.
Right. Okay? Yeah. And I guess it also then comes down to that also destroys the psychological safety in a company, because people feel like they're not being heard. They feel like, you know, it destroys the trust that people might have up and down the chain, because one way or the other, they don't feel like they were either heard or told that there was something wrong.
100%.
Interesting. So, like, as a leader, would you just not state your opinion, or find a way to, like, anonymously state it? How would you solve that?
So I think the biggest thing is to say that you are hypothesis driven. So I think hypothesis driven helps more than data driven, because like, you can always lie with statistics, right? But if you say, so I was reading this book, it was called The Geek Way, and he was basically talking about the virtues of the new age tech companies. He's like, it's not about tech, it's because, he didn't use the same words, but basically hypothesis driven, right? That it is essentially following the scientific method, right? But basically what he's saying is, like, we get, like, if Google releases a new feature, they usually don't release it to everyone. They release it to a small subset of users, and then religiously measure all the data around the feature release. And they might really, like, the example he had was, like, slightly different shade of blue to each subset of users. So they test, like, 80 shades of blue or whatever, and then they find the best one. Now, you can potentially do too much of that kind of thing and whatever, or you could potentially not have the resources to do all this A/B testing and whatever. But I think in a lot of times, that is a very helpful framework. So once you know that things that you release need to be tested, and they need to, like, you just need to know what the outcome comes up with, then you can sort of invest in that culture.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. I'm over here just kind of picturing, like, what if you are in the middle, you're a director, you have a little bit of sway, but not a lot. So can you implement a hypothesis-driven culture in just one part of the org and be successful? I don't
in
know if that's
opinion,
true.
Yes.
Yeah,
in my
you
opinion,
can.
Yes,
okay.
But like, it's, you know, it all depends on how well you can sort of sell yourself up and down and convince the executives that what you're doing is actually working or whatever. But, like, yeah, if you have a domain, you can implement productive reasoning or scientific method or hypothesis-driven development in your domain to the extent possible. Now, there's always a chance that you're overridden with someone from upstairs, right? Like, Absolutely. There right. is a chance that what you're doing is not going to gel with the people next door also. But there also is a chance that people will learn, because once people are practiced in sort of productive reasoning, they actually like they feel that it's better, like that, like your team is likely okay. to experience a very good sense of being of psychological safety, and mm-hmm. then maybe you can get this to spread out in the organization. So like it sort of depends on your situation, but like I do believe that like you don't have to, you know, only wait until you are a CEO to you know, instill a certain culture. But like if we're looking at example of Microsoft, like I mean, yeah, like the reason everybody knows about growth mindset now is Satya Nadella, right? Who mm-hmm. you know reformed Microsoft, and he didn't reform Microsoft until he became a CEO, and people were forced to listen to his opinions about whether right. or not they should have growth mindset, right? So
right.
But one of the reasons he became a CEO is that teams he was leading prior to that were, you know, willing to go to bat for him very much.
Right. Huh. Very interesting. Very interesting. It's an interesting way to look at a lot of the problems that a lot of organizations have and kind of how to deal with those situations. Cause I have seen the watermelon, what did you call it?
Watermelon reports. Yeah.
Watermelon reports. Yes. I've seen that a lot. I know usually when I lead a team, if I catch everybody just reporting green to me, but they say something that makes me think, nope, I'm changing your status to yellow, or I'm changing it to red, and you're going to have to answer properly. Let's try this again. Mm-hmm. But usually it's trying to break people of that habit of I'm going to report it as green because I don't want to get in trouble. So right. It is a lot of that safety.
And then like, one of the things I like about America is there is certain like level of culture that says like making mistakes is not like it's so accepted, and
right.
having failed at something potentially creates an opportunity for you to be more successful. And there are definitely some cultures in which this is way less accepted, and people will report green to you no matter what. And like, I don't actually know how people build stuff in these cultures. but it's, you know, it's difficult to do. And it's like, again, it's, I don't know, like imagine, you know, you all having a team Slack channel and people watch what managers say, right? People watch mm-hmm. what, you know, technical principal level ICs say, and people watch everybody else as well. So like someone making a silly joke about how dare you, you know, break the build or something could actually that thing that destroys the psychological safety for someone who just came to the team. And I've had these conversations before where I'm like, you know that you're joking, but this person who joined a week ago doesn't know you, have never met you in person, doesn't know that you're joking, and they now assume that they're not like the scrutinized for breaking the build, quote unquote, right? And so even little things can sometimes be very important to how people behave.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think it is an interesting thing. This is something that I've found a lot of people who, as they climb the ranks, they don't realize, like you said, that they don't realize the impact of their words. And it's definitely something that I've seen a lot of people have to learn as they go up or down, I guess, or back over to staff or whatever they might be doing. It's learning that. So learning how to cultivate that growth mindset with hypothetical or hypothesis-driven development, I guess, kind of wrapping it all up with a little bow on it. Interesting. This is definitely an interesting conversation. I'm just trying to think if there's any like major something, because we are surprisingly already almost at time. I know you and I could just keep talking for like another 2, 3, 4, 5 hours as we will. Is there anything else about this though that you think we haven't really touched on, like this idea of a learning organization and growth mindset and those sorts of things?
So I think an interesting related topic that we haven't really dove into is procrastination.
Yeah.
And both personal, like people procrastinate and organizations also procrastinate, right? Like, you know, this feeling faster in meetings, like when people can't make a decision and instead they involve more and more, you know, stakeholders and they solicit more and more approvals and create more and more policy that prevents you from doing things or whatever. Like, that's organizational procrastination, honestly. And they're both rooted in the same reasons. Again, fear, right? I'm afraid of making a mistake. And so a lot of like personal procrastination is just, it basically rooted in perfectionism, which is again, something closely related to fixed mindset. Because in a fixed mindset, if I didn't create the perfect presentation or perfect code or perfect whatever it is, then it reflects poorly on my intelligence. And this, you know, it's a blow to my person. And so I procrastinate until essentially my fear of like failing just to show up with anything is bigger than my fear of not being good enough. In organizations, the same, like, it's sort of a very similar concept, but it's like, I'm afraid of being blamed for making the wrong decision. Therefore, I start covering my behind by involving more and more layers of approval into that decision so that if something fails, it's not me. It's, you know, the McKinsey consultants or the person next door in procurement or whatever it is.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess in some ways it's, it does make a lot of sense why there's so many consultants getting consulted. Because sometimes it's about, hey, I need help from the outside to change something. But a lot of times it's like, I don't know what to do. I could make a decision, or I could call like 10 other people and ask them to make the decision for me.
So as a consultant,
I know.
As a consultant, I'm a little bit biased. But I will say that a lot of times it's when you show up and let's say not everybody, but a lot of people in the organization already know what they need to do to get better. But they sort of, they need someone else to tell them, or they need someone else to tell their boss, or they need someone else to tell their peer from another part of the organization. But like basically getting to that coalition and consensus on what we need to do to accomplish better results is oftentimes a job of a consultant.
Yeah. I always heard it as consultants are there to validate the decisions you've already made internally, one way or the other. That's usually the joke that I've always heard is like, hey, we already knew this part.
Right.
Just validate it for me.
There is the separate situation where like, so the biggest thing I run into is people show up and they say like, we need to move faster. I'm like, okay. And then we start digging in and it's like, you don't need to move faster. You need to fix, like, you know, these people being on call, like not sleeping ever, or you need to fix this like 20-year-old piece of software that you keep just patching and it just keeps breaking and you keep patching. You don't realize it's actually costing you millions because you're doing all these customer support calls because it's constantly breaking. And you're like, oh, you know, it's cheap because, you know, there's one developer patching it. It's like, no, your entire organization is trying to hold this together. Oftentimes it's not like, you know, get faster from commit to deploy. It's something else, and people don't necessarily realize it.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know. You might be able to fix that with growth mindset, but hey, it keeps you employed. So maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But speaking of that, we are just about at time, unfortunately. But I want to give you the chance to kind of, you know, plug something special to you. Plug something that's, you know, whatever it is, whether it's like a book that you've read, book that you've written, whatever it might be, this is your time. Go for it. Tell the world more about what's up for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So two things. One is I'm, you know, at Ergonautic, which is a small consulting company, and we're writing a book that,
oh boy,
you know, we could hope that it will be out soon. And it's going to be about basically improving your outcomes through having better metrics and better way to sort of manage towards these metrics. So essentially, you know, becoming a learning organization, or rather also delivering products faster, better, more, with more quality. So hopefully, you know, it's like, if rescuing your stalling DevOps transformation or whichever transformation was stalling right there. And then the second thing I want to plug in is DevOps Day Chicago, which is the 10th time we're running DevOps Day Chicago. It's going to be in the Willis Tower, which is the Sears Tower. So if you want to visit, it's going to be on March 18th, 2025. And obviously, I'm excited for it. It's always been a very good conference. So if you're around, please come check it out. So that's my plugs.
Awesome. Well, so folks, keep an eye out for that book and check out the consultancy and obviously DevOps Day Chicago. Sasha, thank you so much for talking with me today. This was a lot of fun and I definitely learned something, or I hope I did. Maybe I did. Maybe I fixed my mindset. I hope so. But thank you so much for coming on with me. This was great.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a really great conversation and hopefully we'll talk soon again.
Oh, I'm sure we will. All right, folks. Well, you will hear, you can get everything we talked about in the show notes, which you can find on the link on wherever you're listening. You'll hear a little more about that in the closing. But on that note, Sasha and I are going to say bye for now. Say bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Technically Leadership. Feedback is a gift that I treasure. So please find me on LinkedIn, Blue Sky, Mastodon, or the Packet Pusher Slack. Or you can send feedback through the form at packetpushers.net/FU. By the way, that stands for follow-up. Links to all of those spots are in the description and show notes. Share this episode with your friends and colleagues, and let me know if you have someone you think I should talk with about leadership. For now, though, go lead.